Welcome to the Retail Focus Podcast, a weekly collection of news, interviews, and information from the world of retail.
Welcome to this edition of the Retail Focus Podcast. I'm Trent Kling for Leighton Working Behind the Scenes. Coming up on today's show, we'll have an interview with Ned Hayes, the CEO of Snowshoe. Snowshoe is a loyalty technology provider based in Portland, Oregon. They do a number of things, but specifically we're going to be talking to Ned about a pilot program they're running in Olympia, Washington, designed to entice customers to shop local and shop at some of the non-chain mom-and-pop stores existing in Olympia, talking about also potentially scaling up that program as they go. It's an interesting interview, and I think it's an interesting concept overall. You'll certainly want to stick around for that. In news, we'll talk about how unemployment benefits ending has affected, or in some cases not affected, the retail workforce and retail hiring. And we'll discuss Albertsons' earnings call taking place this last week in our news segment. A reminder, the obligatory one, of course, that you can like us and rate us on any podcast listening platform, whether that's Spotify or Amazon or Apple Podcasts or Google. Your ratings and those mysterious algorithms behind the scenes help others to find our show. So if you're interested in retail and you enjoy listening on a week-in, week-out basis, your ratings help others to seek us out. You can also check us out on social media at Retail Podcast. Leighton at the helm, uploading various pictures and news stories on both Twitter and Instagram. So let's talk about Albertsons' first quarter as the numbers came in from that last week. Their quarter ended June 19th, 2021. And we've discussed this before on the show, but just a quick reminder, their main banners are, of course, Albertsons and Safeway, but they also have regional banners such as Vaughn's on the West Coast, Jewel Osco in the Upper Midwest, Tom Thumb, United, and Randall's in Texas, Acme, Shaw's, and a lot more. There are, it seems like, close to 20 banners under the Albertsons company. And so I think it's important to provide numbers from competitors as a basis for comparison for this earnings call for Albertsons. Even though the quarters are slightly offset, Albertsons' quarter takes place, end of quarter that is, takes place at a somewhat odd time as far as retailers are concerned. But looking at Kroger, their identical sales fell 4.1% in their most recent quarter, but on a two-year stack increased 14.9%. And by the way, Kroger, probably Albertsons' closest comp with a roughly equivalent number of stores to Albertsons' 2,278. Meanwhile, Walmart's comps in their latest quarter grew 6%, the quarter offset by 2 months, by the way, on a two-year stack increased 16%. Not a perfect comparison because Walmart, of course, does a lot of general merchandise business. You look at Publix, their comps grew 2.4% on a nearly three-month offset, 16.6% on a two-year stack. And then Spartan Nash, who we covered on the show just a couple of months ago, albeit much smaller, saw comps for owned stores down 7% in their latest quarter, but up 9.3% on a two-year stack. So the question is, where would Albertsons come in? As far as they were concerned, they were lapping a first quarter of 2020 that saw identical sales absolutely explode by 26.5%. And as we discussed at the time, they probably benefited most of any retailer from the panic buying conditions. Prior to that point, Albertsons comps more or less even over the prior 3 years, but they had been trending upward slightly in the few quarters prior to the pandemic. Well, as for this quarter, Albertsons company-wide sales did come back to the pack a little bit, with identical sales decreasing 10% even. On a two-year stack, though, their increase sits at 16.5%, so that's above Kroger, above Walmart, right around where Publix's numbers sit. Publix thought of as kind of the crown jewel of grocery store chains there in the Southeast as they continue to expand. So Albertsons still able to pick up overall share of wallet versus the first quarter of 2019, unable to hold on to more of their sales increase from last year versus other grocers, but still, when you look at overall market share in grocery, it did continue to grow somewhat when you look in aggregate, not just against other publicly traded companies or other companies that release their numbers in public. And the more important part for Albertsons is they are seeing an increase in overall share of wallet, which we'll talk about here in a second. And by the way, traffic up for both in-store and e-commerce transactions. Basket size, of course, down from those panic buying conditions. And a big topic for grocery this year, at least, has been e-commerce. You know, grocers seeing incremental gains year over year, but not the leaps that they'd seen in years past, and certainly not the leap that they saw in the pandemic, even though a lot of the news articles you'll read seems to indicate, well, e-commerce might be the way of the future for grocery. The bottom line is just not seeing a huge increase. And for Albertsons, they were clear that they were able to somewhat sustain their growth from last year, though at the noted cost of their gross profit. They noted that took a hit because of the digital sales. But digital sales were essentially flat year over year in 2021. On a two-year stack, they are up 276% from pre-pandemic. So the overall message from Albertsons is they held on to the customers that started shopping on their e-commerce platform, but more customers are going into the stores themselves. And we mentioned, of course, traffic up in the stores themselves. One thing they noted, comps for in-store only customers, so the customers that have only ever shopped at Albertsons and their brands in-store, those were down for the quarter. Makes sense. Not as much panic buying. They were still going to the store even during the course of the pandemic, but of course their basket size was larger. But their comps for their omni-channel customers actually grew. So I mentioned comps in digital flat year over year, but the customers that were shopping via Albertsons digital platforms over the course of the last year, as the pandemic has eased somewhat, although we're seeing the Delta variant certainly put a dent in some of those numbers here over the last few weeks, but customers who shopped online are now going in store more often. And so those customers that spent money in an e-commerce fashion over the last year are spending more money year over year than customers who didn't. And we discussed, by the way, engagement for Tractor Supply Company customers last week. Albertsons discussed their engagement with their loyalty platform customers as well, called the Just For You program. Albertsons seeing very similar retention numbers, retention for that program at 94%. So once Albertsons has you as a loyal customer, you're part of that loyalty program, you're shopping in e-commerce, you're very, very likely to return to the store, whether that be in-store or online. Now, on the income front, they had adjusted net income per share of 89 cents this quarter, unadjusted 78 cents. Both of those came ahead of company expectations. And although their identical sales took a step back, the quarterly figures were enough for Albertsons to actually increase their fiscal 2021 outlook, where previously they had expected identical sales drops of 6 to 7.5% for this year. They've actually adjusted this to drops of 5 to 6%. Basically, they expect the drops to become less notable as they anniversary the quarters later in the year, not necessarily associated with the panic buying we saw last March through May. Their net income numbers were adjusted upwards by about 10% as well in terms of their expectations. As far as the second quarter is concerned, so far sales are continuing at similar levels to the first quarter, which management sees as a positive. And one interesting note, they said high-end wine sales as well as seafood sales have been up in the second quarter. They attributed this both to customers continuing to have home-based habits. So instead of going out for fine wine and a lobster, they're doing that at home. And there's also been a trading up of sorts in certain circumstances, and that's something that we've heard throughout the grocery industry as well. And you know, it's interesting, we'll talk about this for Albertsons a little bit later on, but as far as private label is concerned, they're actually seeing private label sales go up as well. So you have budget-conscious consumers, and then you have consumers trading up. We're starting to see, I think, a bit of a barbell market forming in grocery based on what Albertsons has told us, based on what Kroger has told us over the last few earnings calls. Now, worth noting for Albertsons is their investment in brick and mortar as well as digital in the quarter. They referenced this actually as their first priority on the call, which that's pretty rare in 2021. Everyone wants to talk about those digital engagement numbers. Albertsons talking about opening stores and remodeling stores. They opened 5 new stores in their system during this quarter and remodeled 33 stores during the same period of time. They ended up with 26 net new stores at the end of this quarter versus last year, and that's as a result of their steady expansion, something we noted a few months ago when discussing HEB's expansion into Dallas and the DFW area, was that we've seen major grocers really slow brick and mortar growth, particularly during the pandemic, but even about the year before the pandemic, we were seeing that growth slowing. Now we're seeing signs of new builds starting back up. Albertsons never really stopped the growth. They've continued to grow by a handful of stores each quarter. Likewise with, by the way, smaller footprint stores such as Aldi, and we've all heard about Lidl's expansion over on the East Coast, but Kroger and Target among those who have announced new builds recently as well. Kroger and Target starting to shift that back into gear, and it'll be interesting to see if Walmart follows, because they've been somewhat silent on the new store front over the course of the last couple of years. In fact, a new Kroger build was just announced within miles of my residence here in Colorado Springs with their affiliate King Soopers, but they're announcing multiple new marketplace projects throughout the country as well. Now, as far as in-store sales trends are concerned, Albertsons seeing very similar trends as Kroger reported. We talked about the whole private label versus trading up aspect of things, potential barbell market, if you will. Well, CEO Vivek Shankaran said that their fresh categories continued to perform well, as Kroger's have, and he noted in prepared remarks that fresh departments outpaced center store departments by around 200 basis points on a 2-year stack. All fresh categories for them, doesn't matter which one, they're ahead of where they were in 2019. Now, private labels also continued to grow, with penetration increasing over 100 basis points to 25.2%. And management felt like their private label penetration benefited from 318 new products, most of those in bulk items during the quarter that were released, and also an increased shelf space presence in some of their legacy stores, either as a result of those remodels we discussed or as a result of resets. And of course, the company has a reason to reset some of these legacy stores to include more of these private label products, because the margins are greater, especially with inflation setting in on some of the bigger CPGs out there. Now, overall, Albertsons anticipates over 800 new private label products this year. This includes an extension of their ready-to-eat or ready-to-heat meal program, which they want to be in over 20% of their locations by 2021's close. We've seen Albertsons with some false starts in this area, of course, in the past, but now they're doing this basically in-house under their private label platforms. And inflation on the call, of course, was at first mentioned in passing, with Shankaran stating that they're attempting to offset inflation through $1.5 billion in gross savings via either labor efficiency, cutting shrink, and optimizing promotions, all three of which they were successful in doing this past quarter. But we should note, however, that for whatever competition exists in the price wars between Walmart and Kroger, generally, Albertsons hasn't participated historically as aggressively, but Shankaran said they might not need to participate as aggressively because their data, according to him, suggests that promotions have been the same for their competitors over the last 2 to 3 quarters, and he noted that he doesn't expect price competition to be fierce in the back half of the year, as supply has constrained grocers somewhat. So he noted specifically categories such as sodas, beer, for example, supply not readily available to a lot of grocers, so you're unable to do a lot of the discounts, a lot of the promotions that you would in previous years. And inflation for Albertsons does remain category specific. Modest inflation to this point that's been passed through to the consumer because those price wars aren't going so rapidly. Actually, Shankaran called it on the call a more rational competitive environment. And in the Q&A, they specified inflation across the board at about 1.5 to 1.7% for the quarter, which is modest indeed, although Shankaran has gone on record of late saying that it was closer to 3 to 4% towards the end of the quarter. So you did see increases as the first quarter aged, and they expect it to be higher as the year continues. And just like Kroger did on their call a month or so ago, leadership said that if inflation is 3 to 4%, it's actually ideal for the company as it drives that interest in private label products, therefore driving margins up. They're also hearing worries from the CPG companies they work with regarding inflation and maybe an additional round of increased pricing for those companies, which of course turns eyeballs to those private label products in comparison. However, Shankaran did say that the fresh categories continue to be dynamic despite the fact that produce has seen inflation for certain products. Tomatoes, as an example, I believe it was mentioned in a national article this week that tomatoes seeing a bit of inflation there. Some products, including produce products, are seeing a slight decrease in price. So again, the articles that are fashionable to write, of course, are about things that are going up in price. But while that's happening, our friends at Produce Retailer would be first to tell you, quietly, behind the scenes, there are some produce items, there are some fresh items, even meat items going down in price. These are the items most popular in grocery stores, it seems, as of right now. Overall, another positive earnings call, I think, on the balance for Albertsons. Of course, we on the show are big fans of CEO Vivek Shankaran. We feel like he's done a great job really turning the company around over the last 3 to 4 years. There's been a lot of internal investment, making it such that they're not playing second fiddle in markets that are dominated by Kroger or maybe a Walmart. So I think overall going forward for the Idaho-based company, a lot of positives to work with here as they continue to grow their store footprint, as they continue to invest in some of those legacy stores. And we're anxious to see what the next year plus holds for Albertsons as a company, considering that they were able to gain overall share of wallet in terms of spending during this past quarter. Well, coming up after this break, we'll be joined by Ned Hayes, the CEO of Snowshoe. He'll talk to us a little bit about Snowshoe's background as a company, but mostly we'll discuss a pilot program they've got going on in Olympia, Washington, with an app they call Go Downtown, an app designed to get people to shop local and pay attention to those local stores as local retailers try to fight back against the giants for market share post-pandemic. As shoppers in some parts of the country return to brick and mortar shopping in large numbers, it's said that some of the retail giants are likely to hold on to the share that they gained from local retailers during the pandemic. So, what can local businesses do to regain that share? And more importantly, what can towns, cities, and commerce organizations throughout the U.S. do to facilitate this on behalf of businesses in their towns? Here to discuss this topic and more is Ned Hayes, the CEO of Snowshoe. Snowshoe is a retail loyalty technology provider based in Portland, Oregon. Ned, welcome to the show.
So great to be here.
First, I was wondering if you could describe a bit about Snowshoe, not only the scope and the history of the company, but also what the company does on the day-to-day, not just in retail, but the overall view of the company.
Happy to do so. Yeah, thanks for having us. Snowshoe has been around for about 7 years. We started as a Techstars and Y Combinator funded company. Lots of investments from interesting people who were looking at the technology that we had and looking at it as a hardware solution. And so we went out with a number of solutions in security and other domains. And over the last few years have really focused in on retail loyalty because we provide a smart mobile authentication solution that allows somebody to check in at point of sale or, you know, any place in a retail store and just check in and validate that they were there. So it's a smarter way of doing location without having to get customers' private information. And we've had some great traction in the retail loyalty market over the last year or two.
So as you mentioned, you were able to parlay this technology into what has become a loyalty product for retailers. As you were approaching kind of the development of this technology, what were some of the things that you wanted to keep in mind as far as making sure that that check-in technology translated well to a variety of retailers that you might be serving?
Well, as I said, we were funded because people saw the technology as being really interesting. You know, it's a unique pattern match on a cell phone screen, really interesting stuff. But what we found was absolutely key was making this as simple and easy to use as possible, both for end customers and for retailers. You know, the last thing a retailer needs is another thing to keep track of, another piece of technology to plug in. And so we actually created a piece of technology that doesn't require batteries, doesn't require plugins. It can just sit on your metal register or anywhere on your counter and can just receive a kind of passive check-in. And so keeping this really simple, keeping it really straightforward has been the watchword for our success. And a lot of retailers have found this to be really effective because, as I said, you don't need to have any private customer information. You also don't need to plug it in. And it just works out of the box with any cell phone screen.
So we've addressed the technology that's behind this platform, but I want to go back to kind of what we were talking about in the beginning or in that introduction. A lot of local retailers throughout the country trying to gain back that market share that they might have lost during the pandemic, but they're still somewhat fractured in the way that they market to an audience and the way they attract an audience. So let's connect the dots here. In what way has your software been able to maybe assist retailers or, as we talked about, assist towns in banding together? And I understand you have a pilot program as well running in the Pacific Northwest in this regard.
Right, right. Well, the hardware really works great with a piece of software that allows check-ins. And what we saw was that small retail districts really thrive when all of them are banding together. You know, you can have a ton of small fish compete against a big shark, who might be named Amazon, if you all band together. Right? So what we saw was that customers tend to travel to their favorite stores in kind of a loop or a regular route. And so we created a gamified application called Go Downtown. It's available everywhere. And this application is now being used by about 200 stores in the Olympia, Washington area as a pilot. And what they've seen is that somebody who visits the local bookstore is then going down the street to the gelato place, is then going down the street for coffee, is then maybe picking up some bread at the local baker. And all of these local stores get more traction because people are incentivized to visit all of the stores rather than just hitting their one coffee shop. They hit multiple stores. And so creating this kind of retail loop creates an experience for customers too, where they feel like they are in a game. Like if I visit one more store, I might get more points. And so we've been able to deliver this app, and we think this app is going to go big.
We'll talk a little bit more about this partnership here in a moment. But first, just for our listeners' sake, you know, the term gamification, gamify, you see it a lot out there. So just for our audience's sake, why gamify a loyalty platform like this? What is the benefit, the ultimate benefit to the end user?
Well, let's back up to human behavior. Right? Shopping is actually a type of game. You're out there trying to find the best thing, the thing that's going to fit on your mantle or the right dress for you. It's a game. You're trying to find things among a mass of many other things. And what we've taken is that general human behavior and kind of turned up the volume on it slightly, saying, hey, if you visit more places, if you visit more local places, your experience will be even better. You'll get discounts, you'll get prizes from visiting local. So what local retailers are struggling with is that during COVID, a lot of people found that staying home was okay. They could find most of what they needed when they stayed home. And so getting people to go back out was the key. So adding additional layers of gamification, and I'm going to explain what gamification is in a nutshell. What it is adding rewards so that behaviors become more prevalent, meaning that people do things more when they feel they'll get more out of it. So again, it's like shopping. We've just turned up the volume on it.
And you mentioned as well that you're working with over 200 retailers there. Also, I know this partnership that you have with Olympia, you've worked very closely with some of the community leaders as well. What was the process like in kind of installing this platform, the Go Downtown app in place in Olympia in terms of interfacing not only with the retailers, but also the community leaders?
Right. Well, Snowshoe went out and talked to a number of different community associations across the country. And we chose the Olympia Downtown Alliance because they had it together. They knew exactly what retailers needed. They had good metrics on what their retailers were doing. They were deeply connected to a Go Local movement where people were really getting excited about going downtown. And so we were able to partner with them and took a number of months to build that partnership with Todd Cutts, who heads up the Olympia Downtown Alliance. And being in lockstep with that alliance allowed us an entree point for every retailer there. So I think it's absolutely key that retailers band together to build that local mass and build momentum around getting people back downtown. Unless you're working together, if you're working across purposes, you aren't going to be able to compete with the big ones. But if you're working together, you're able to have more power and more presence in your community.
And when you were discussing the types of retailers, the types of shops that are among those 200 businesses, you're talking about a very, very diverse group. What were some considerations that went into place knowing that you were going to be dealing with, on one hand, maybe, let's say, an auto mechanic, and on the other hand, maybe a bakery?
Right. Two examples are Olympia.computer. It was one of the first people to sign up, and they provide computer help, right? And down the street, there is a place called Chelsea Farms Oysters, and they are a restaurant, and Chelsea Farms provides amazing small plates, amazing seafood. And, you know, right down the street, there's a bookstore called Orca Books, right? All three of these different types of retailers or different types of businesses are using the program. And so for one of them, they just wanted it on the counter. Chelsea Farms, for example, though, was inquiring about could they have it at each table in their restaurant? And then the bookstore wanted it right at the register, not at the counter, but only when somebody made a purchase. So what's great about our technology is it's very flexible. It can go anywhere in the store. It doesn't need to be at your register like Square or Clover. It can be elsewhere in the store. If you want to drive somebody deeper in the store, you can actually point somebody to the back and say, you have to be back there. You have to check out the cards before you're able to check in. So the retailer or the business can actually control the experience in a very granular fashion. And being able to create something that's very flexible for businesses is key too, because as we all know, every small retailer is curating their experience and creating something unique. So we wanted to give them a tool that could fit into that unique experience rather than them having to shoehorn it into a pre-built box.
Those are some great examples from a very diverse group of retailers that you're serving there in Olympia. I want to go back when you first started talking about the pilot. You said, hey, we looked at a number of communities throughout the country, chose Olympia for this pilot simply because they knew exactly what they wanted. They knew the direction that they wanted to take with something like this. If there are city leaders out there listening to this, what characterizes an appropriate approach to programs like this to where, you know, if not Snowshoe, then something else that cities can band together and their businesses downtown can band together? What were some of the things, in short, that Snowshoe was looking for in terms of these communities that they were able to reach out and help?
Absolutely. A key to success is a sense of community spirit. And that seems like a simple thing to have, but I was surprised by how many communities view each other as competition. And what I love about Olympia is you'll go into a place like Three Magnets Brewing, for example, and they will say, we don't have that beer, but right down the street, there's another bar that does. They really treat each other as part of one community and are really encouraging each other to bring people downtown. And so community spirit is absolutely key. A sense that the local really matters, buying locally matters, shipping stuff in from another environment, from China or the Philippines, that's not local produce. So being able to really build that sense of pride in being local and that sense of pride of we have a unique experience here that you are privileged to be part of. That's also key. The third thing, though, is understanding the value of metrics and understanding that data does matter. And so the Olympia Downtown Alliance and Todd Cutts were very smart about asking, what data can we get about our community? How can we determine What portion of our people are visitors or tourists and which portion are local? How can we maximize our understanding so that we can make this valuable to individual retailers? And so really having a leader in the community or leaders who can band together, build that community spirit, and then listen to what the data is telling them is key. I should say, in reference to Todd Cutts, who leads the Olympia Downtown Alliance, he has been brilliant at listening to individual retailer concerns. We did multiple focus groups with individual retailers and listened to what they said at his guidance. So he is really a master at being able to kind of herd cats, get everyone together, get everybody on the same page, and get everybody driving towards a common goal.
You talk about this data and some of the high-level data, for example, locals versus tourists, but let's go into that a bit further. What other types of data can retailers, can communities expect to get out of the back end of the platform? Because it's not just gamifying it such that customers are shopping more often, but there are other tangible benefits as well.
Right. There are many benefits to this. In the era where Apple is really shutting down Facebook's ability to gather personal data to put, you know, targeting cookies and ads, you need to have another way of getting data. And the best way of getting data is to actually ask customers what data they want to share with you. You know, do they want to tell you their zip code? Do they want to tell you that they like hot dogs or ice cream? You know, if you're in the background kind of creepily mining through information, customers are not going to like it. We're hearing this a lot. And so what Snowshoe has developed is a system that proactively asks people. And if people don't want to share information, that's perfectly fine. And then if a customer chooses to physically check in, they've established location without us having to do anything in the background as far as kind of creepy GPS tracking. We aren't doing any of that. So every retailer can be assured that if the data has been provided to them, the customer has proactively decided to give them that data, which makes it a lot safer to use that data. The customer has actually asked for that kind of information, has proactively said, I want to be part of this. And if you're choosing to be part of it, then it's a pleasure. It's not a pain.
Before we talk about the future of Go Downtown and Snowshoe, I do want to address this because we've talked a little bit around this subject in terms of, you know, maybe benefits for the consumer themselves, but what are some specific benefits that maybe this Olympia project has provided to customers for shopping at some of these 200 retailers there?
Right now, what Olympia has chosen to do is to provide a set of prizes that are actually monetary discounts at every store. And then when you reach the kind of highest level, there will be other prizes yet to be announced that include kind of community activities, whether that's involvement with an arts group or a parade, really experiences that capitalize on that kind of go Ole, love Ole local experience. But at the first levels within the Go Downtown app, are all focused around actual monetary discounts. You've hit, you know, 40, 60 stores over the course of a month. So you get $5 off, you get $10 off. It's a straight, clear discount. No mystery about it.
And it's fascinating to potentially in the future kind of fold in some of those experiential city aspects, as you mentioned, not only involvement with the stores, but various art groups, local events, other things. I think that's a very fascinating approach to it. Now, as far as the future is concerned, we don't want you to give away any company secrets or anything like that, but as you scale up this platform, as you certainly learn in conjunction, in lockstep with the city of Olympia, what does the future hold for the Go Downtown app? What does the future hold for Snowshoe in general?
Well, we're all about supporting local in every community nationwide. So our hope is that this really catches fire and we're able to take the Go Downtown app nationally and even internationally, so that you could check in to your favorite places in Boston, in New York, in Chicago, in Seattle, and you're able to receive prizes and discounts because you've proactively chosen to check in at a local facility and a local company. So down the road, we expect to go from hundreds of users to millions of users.
So you talk about some of these larger cities just very quickly here, you know, Chicago, Seattle, New York. Obviously, this particular pilot is in a city, Olympia. I think the city size itself is about 50,000, but the Olympia Metro, if you want to say that, is a little bit larger than that, certainly. Is there a particular area, size of city, maybe size of group of businesses that you perceive might work best with the platform? Or is it really something where it just open it up to everyone in a neighborhood in New York, for example?
Right. So we chose Olympia partially because it also fit our sizing criteria. So the greater Olympia area is about 250,000 people. We wanted to get a town that was big enough and substantial enough to prove out whether or not this would work. We didn't want to go for some, you know, tiny village. We wanted to go for a real city. So Olympia is a state capital. It's right on the corridor between Portland and Seattle, so it gets a lot of tourist traffic as well. And it was recently featured in an article in the Washington Post as a place to visit. So we wanted a destination place. And from here, we would grow into other destination places, such as Ashland, Oregon, and Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Bellingham, Washington, you know, Santa Cruz, California, Santa Barbara, et cetera. We're really aimed at places that have really unique downtowns that are little jewels that they want to showcase. We do see, though, over time, as those kind of jewel case experiences become important to people to visit, that over time, larger communities would take this up. But we do see this as being really important to specialist downtown environments that want to compete and are not the big box stores. We're really best case for small, unique, curated environments. We do have larger customers who use other applications that we develop, a major hotel chain, a major fuel retailer, but they use applications that they've developed using the same technology. This Go Downtown app is really great for unique small downtowns. And we see that expanding as places that are larger want to really drive people downtown into their own unique experiences.
I think you hit the nail on the head with some of your jewel downtown examples, because I've been to probably half of those in the last 3 months, and I can confirm that. So in any case, Ned, thank you so much for joining us, talking about the Go Downtown platform. It's exciting, and we're excited to see where this heads.
It's a pleasure to be here. Have a great time shopping downtown.
As always, we may have a position in or against companies we discuss on the podcast. Do not invest in stocks solely on the input of the podcast hosts.
We thank Ned for joining us on the show. Such a high energy individual. It was a lot of fun talking to him, not only during the scope of the interview, but off air as well, about this platform. And I think a lot of these markets, I've mentioned this before on the show, but a lot of these markets tend to be ignored, and unjustly so. I think it's so easy for a lot of retail media out there to focus on the Amazons and the Walmarts and the Albertsons like we did to lead the show. But realistically, in terms of retail overall in the country, you need the mom and pop retail shops to be successful, for retail to be healthy overall. And I think this is a platform that can certainly engender that in those size markets throughout the country. Now, our looking ahead story comes via the Washington Post, and more specifically comes via payroll processor Gusto, who provided certain numbers to the Washington Post that indicated trends regarding states that had ended the support of federal unemployment benefits early. This is something that we actually looked ahead to back in May after I visited Montana. If you've listened to the podcast on a regular basis, you'll recall me mentioning I talked to a number of retail stores and retail store managers, HR professionals out there, about the fact that it was just so difficult to find employees in the state because of these lasting unemployment benefits, particularly, of course, the last Montana Kmart. The HR manager there said they have been trying to hire for about the last year and just have not been able to find enough people for positions. Well, Gusto has produced this information that suggests that hiring for states that have ended support of the federal unemployment benefits early has not necessarily outpaced hiring from states where they continued. Now, it is about a half percentage point higher, if you will, if you look at some of the data. But what is interesting from the data is this. States that ended unemployment benefits early have seen an increase in those older than 25 getting hired in various positions, whether they be hospitality, whether they be retail, and so forth, whereas states that have not ended those unemployment benefits in terms of announcing when they'll end, seen a massive increase in hiring among 15 to 19 year olds. Now, the reason I think this is pertinent information, I think it's interesting. I don't know that this data is necessarily going to inform any decisions going forward, certainly, but you look at a market like where I was in Hamilton, Montana, bottom line is there's not a lot of 15 to 19 year olds there to work at that Kmart in Hamilton, Montana. A lot more adults in those particular markets. And in fact, just this past week, I was in Jackson, Wyoming. Again, another town, got a lot of adults, younger, some older, that are populating that town. Not a lot of 15 to 19 year olds. And I was seeing the same thing there in hospitality and retail. People were having a very tough time getting employees. Now hiring signs are everywhere in Jackson, Wyoming, if you go there. I think this is interesting because the states that have ended those unemployment benefits early, by the way, Wyoming is one of those, trying to maybe nudge those 25 plus candidates back into the workforce, but also in terms of retail companies, you know, some of them, it's easy enough to just say, well, hire more teenagers, but some of them exist in markets like Jackson, Wyoming, or like Hamilton, Montana, where there's just a dearth of people from 15 to 19 willing to take those jobs. But overall, I think it's a very fascinating story to follow, especially as we get the Delta variant certainly increasing some of the COVID numbers in states, in the Southeast, in the Midwest. You wonder where that employment data is going to go. And I think from a retail perspective, you have a lot of retailers that are paying $15 an hour, even in places where the minimum wage is half that. And so it's a dialogue, obviously, that goes back and forth. I am looking ahead to what states decide to do regarding these unemployment benefits going forward. If the numbers continue to be relatively steady, early versus late states in terms of cutting those off, if the numbers change at all as we go forward, if more people pour back into the workforce, because there is one thing we know as of right now, every retailer basically that's out there is looking for people to work for them. It's a great time to break into retail. If you ask a lot of the HR professionals that are out there, if you ask a lot of recruiters out there, so you kind of wonder if this nudge back to the workforce in some areas will influence people to maybe switch roles, maybe take retail roles where they otherwise wouldn't, especially with increased pay in retail. So I think it's a story worth keeping an eye on over the course of the next 6 months, especially with all the uncertainty surrounding different variants of the COVID-19 virus. Well, that'll do it for this week's show. A big thanks to Leighton behind the scenes for prepping everything, and a big thanks to Ned Hayes for joining the show. Coming up next week, we'll be joined by Eric Talley, Strategic Accounts at Stanley Security. He's going to discuss the current state of loss prevention in retail and what some retailers are doing to try and stem shrink. And it's not just about theft. He'll talk about things like, for example, fire response and after-hours issues as well. As always, it's a fascinating conversation. We've had a summer of really great interviews on the show. Looking forward to speaking with him. And coming up in a few weeks, we've got an interview waiting in the wings with someone that's putting forth an initiative to assist rural grocery stores, something that's often overlooked, rural retail, and something that we try to focus on here on the podcast. Because again, I maintain that when rural retailers or mid-sized market retailers are doing well, retail as a whole is doing well. So looking forward to that in a few weeks as well. Until next week, I'm Trent, saying so long.
This has been the Retail Focus Podcast. For more, visit our website at retailfocuspodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at Retail Podcast.